another in the continuing series of visits from Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong Visa Geezer. How are you?
Hi, Phil. Yes.
Right, good to see you back. You. Welcome back.
Thank
been
you.
Saying all morning, if you've got any questions for Steve, it doesn't matter how silly you think it is. He'll probably know the answer to it. We're going to start with investment visas today.
Yeah.
They're getting their act together.
The Immigration Department. It's interesting. Yeah, they're very busy. And there's some good news and some bad news. I mean, if you're a business investment visa applicant and you're an existing resident of Hong Kong and you make your application, it's only taking about 6 to 8 weeks to get finalised, which is pretty good going.
Yeah.
The guys on the fifth floor are doing a great job. On the 24th floor, where the applications for business investment visas from visitors or current non-residents, taking up to 6 months, yeah. And it's not because the guys on the 25th floor are sort of any less efficient or effective. It's just incredible. There's so many people want to come and start businesses in this town.
I'm assuming, too, there would be fairly more questions asked. They're not assuming somebody's pulling a dodgy one, but, you know, you come on holiday and all of a sudden you fall in love with the place and you get a job, but you want to do it legally. So they're bound to ask more questions about that.
As a matter of course, that's absolutely right, Phil. But normally it takes about 3 months, not 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. By which time you've got to go home anyway, sort of thing. Yeah, and we've all done it, Steve. You go to a place and you say, wow, wouldn't it be cool to live here? And actually, in the old days, the British could do that here.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And a large number of foreigners do arrive as visitors, and they sort of smell money in the air, and they get infected by the enthusiasm.
Or a life change.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, I would say that probably we've been the busiest that we've ever been in. Sort of me doing this for 20 years now. Investment visa applications, they're just crawling out the woodwork. That's probably a function of the fact that, you know, the rest of the world's economy is basically rubbish, and you can come to Hong Kong and have a fair go at it. You know.
Tell me a bit more about that kind of visa.
Investment visa.
Yeah.
Well, basically, if you're in a position to show that you can make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong, and that's like in many ways asking how long's a piece of string. But if you can do that and you've got the resources to give effect to a business plan that's going to result in local employment opportunities, introduction of sort of new processes, technologies, thinking and the like, house yourself in suitable business premises and you know, have a half-decent story, take that to the Immigration Department and they'll look at it, and if they think that the approvability test is going to be satisfied, you're home and host.
Any questions for Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong Visa Geezer? He's been calling himself that for years.
No, Phil, you've been calling me that for years. I just picked it up.
You nicked it.
Yeah.
Anyway, any questions about your visa situation, whatever it is, doesn't matter, morningbrew@rthk.hk or stick something on our Morning Brew Facebook page. I'm looking at your website. Great story here. This looks like a success story.
Go on, mate.
It says, Hong Kong employment visa, when all else failed, we appealed to the chief executive and we won.
Goodness gracious, yes. Yeah, that was an incident, it was a few years ago actually.
Yeah.
Where a large business was coming to Hong Kong to establish a number of different operations.
Yeah.
And for one reason or another, the immigration officer that was looking at one of the manager's applications for an employment visa took the idea that the fact that they were called, from a branding perspective, this manager was called a bookseller. The immigration department felt that that particular individual was not in possession of special skills, knowledge and experience of value to him, not readily available in Hong Kong. And then they weren't really paying heed.
They took it literally, didn't they?
They took it literally, and they weren't paying heed to the fact that this was part of their brand proposition and that this firm was going to, in a sense, reinvent the way that books were being retailed in Hong Kong. And at the time that this all came down, Hong Kong was losing retail jobs to the tune of about 20,000 a week. It was the Asian economic crisis. And we just couldn't get past the frontline immigration officers with this story. So in the end, because of the pressing nature of the need for the approval, we took the situation directly to the chief executive's office, and 6 days later the case was approved.
Interesting stuff. I'm wondering, you know, lots of countries have something similar to this, in possession of skills, not necessarily readily available.
Yeah.
Is that a slightly duff wording? Because it's not a case of you're better than a person in a particular country. It's just that this company wants you.
Well, it's what the Immigration Department have couched as being sort of the catch-all notion. Well, it is, because it gives enough guidance to applicants to know whether or not they're sort of in the hunt for an approval, but it gives sufficient flexibility of the Immigration Department to accept applications on an all-comer basis and take a view on each individual application. See, it's not legalistic. If you've got Australia, go to the United States. There's all kinds of jumps, you've got all terms of hoops you've got to jump through.
Yeah.
But in Hong Kong, we've got flexibility now. Now, that works to our advantage in the vast majority of cases. Because
yeah.
once you get approved, you're home and hosed, right? But if you get denied, the Immigration Department don't give you specific reasons for why they've denied you. They just restate the policy. So you're left guessing as to actually what the reason might be for the refusal.
See, it takes it to, in theory, it takes it to a whole different area, if you like. You know, you're in their eyes, are people in country X better than you? But we're not interested in that. It's just that we want this guy.
Yeah,
that's not a competition with the locals.
No, that's right. And you know, the general employment policy has a category called professionals.
All right.
And professionals are expected to sort of be, you know, cut out of a certain cloth. And as long as you were basically wearing the right garments, then the Immigration Department in the main are going to say, well, yes, you're going to actually add a benefit to Hong Kong's economy. You're not really going to be competing with locals for this particular position. And they're also, you know, cognizant of the fact that a lot of people come and they spend 1, 2, 3 years here and then leave. So, in a sense, Hong Kong has benefited by having temporary access to those skills.
Here's one for you, Steve. I don't know if you've ever handled any of these, but what about when it comes to doctors? You know, because there are tons of skilled doctors, great doctors here and from overseas, except Hospital X wants to hire a bloke from Australia for this job.
Yeah, the primary challenge with doctors is not so much the Immigration Department intervening to determine whether a particular doctor's got certain skills or not.
Yeah.
It's about local registration with the medical authorities here. So on the basis of the Medical Registration Board will register you, the Immigration Department effectively just tick the box and say, away you go. It's like pilots, you know, as long as you can qualify under the qualification scheme to be an operating pilot in Hong Kong, the Immigration Department don't second guess. The employer's motivations for choosing that particular character.
We've talked in the past about employment visas, i.e. I want to come and work in Hong Kong, and you think you have to go through tons and tons of hoops. I met some guys the other day who are here working for a little while, got an employment visa without any difficulty whatsoever, and the Macau thing, just explain.
Well, once you get approved, then you get issued with a visa label. And if you're in Hong Kong at the time that your visa label's issued to you, in order to activate your new status, you have to exit Hong Kong, relinquishing your visitor visa in the process, and then re-enter with your new visa label stuck in your passport so that the officer at the border can admit you on the basis of an employment visa permission.
There's no other way of doing that.
No, I mean, principally, it used to be the Immigration Department would change your status from visitor to employment while you were here, but a few years ago they revamped the whole system, and now you've got an entry visa or you've got a residence visa, and you're adjusting your status as a resident. You can't adjust your status as a visitor. You've got to exit and then re-enter and activate your new residence status at the point of re-entry.
Right, see, these things did almost change overnight at handover time. I remember things being different because there were lots of pop artists coming in for the various gigs.
There's two things. I mean, there was at the handover, there was an all-round adjustment in terms of changes in control on British citizens.
All right.
And that effectively turned itself into a registration exercise. The Immigration Department didn't say no to anybody. They didn't kick people out. They didn't start making value judgments about what people were doing. They just needed to cross all the T's and dot all the I's and get British citizens into the loop, as it were.
Yeah.
But immigration policy and the way that the immigration system is administered obviously evolves over time. So in the last few years, the process that we've just talked about, the entry visa versus residence visa, that's come into effect.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that at the handover, but it is now. I think that's in large part because of the way the immigration department's technology system is set up.
I've just noticed
that
you're giving a talk today.
I am, yeah, yeah.
And it's an interesting topic for a bloke who is a professional to say, how can I get an investment visa without professional help? But the serious question there is it straightforward? Is it something that would blind you with science, or could you do it?
Well, let me put it this way. If you know what you're doing, it's not rocket science.
All right.
And the problem for most people is that they don't know what they're doing, understandably so, because they don't have access to experience. Right, yeah. So our websites are predicated on the idea that we can give information away to people so that they can get on with their own cases and they don't have to pay expensive consultants like us to help them.
Also, because these are probably bog standard things and you've got more things to do than the real simple procedures.
Well, in final analysis, what people are doing when they instruct an immigration consulting firm like ours is they're buying peace of mind.
I suppose so.
That's what it's all
somebody
about.
Somebody just to sift through it for you.
And service, yeah, yeah. So by using the web to educate people as to how to go about solving their immigration problems,
yeah,
sort of no strings attached, effectively, you know, we're able to command an audience and people get to know about us.
All right, then, talking to Steve Barnes, as we do every couple of months, if you have any questions about your visa or your friend's visa, whatever, family, probably more importantly, morningbrew@rthk.hk. You're talking about immigration problems. What tends to be the one that comes back and back and back these days for you?
A lot of refusals these days, Phil. A lot of refusals, yeah.
Why yeah. do you think?
I don't know. I mean, not so much in our office, but our websites are set up so that we, you know, we get to understand what people are searching for and the kind of information that they're using our websites to get to grip with the problems.
Yeah.
And probably more than anything in the last 2 or 3 months, just seems to be a lot of refusals, a lot of requests for information about what you do if a case gets refused. Now, it may well be that there aren't any more refusals than there ever typically are. It's just that we're having access to more information that's telling us that there are a certain amount of refusals going on.
How much leeway does your frontline immigration officer have?
Well, it's not just an individual officer that's making the final call. It's a team decision through a sort of scaled hierarchy of decision-making processes. The guys on the front line do have, a very, very large amount of discretion to make it work one way or the other.
All right.
The problem is that if you get refused, whilst there are appeal avenues in process, it's sort of cumbersome to go through that appeal process. And like any appeal, it's always an uphill struggle.
Do you know, by any chance, what the common things are that they probably would stop people on? I mean, I know they don't disclose.
Yeah, no. There are. I think people get denied because they obviously don't have special skills, knowledge, and experience. They get denied because they're not being paid enough. They get denied because there's some sort of negative prior record that's gone on in the past. So the system works against them rather than for them.
I suppose it's clean.
If it's clean, because they genuinely don't pass the approvability test. They're not professionals for the purposes of policy.
Mm. And you say there's a lot. I wonder why. I mean, if in fact that's true.
I think it's probably a function of the fact that the Immigration Department invite all comers to make applications, and they're not particularly clear through the websites as to what's required to be successful in approval. And that's not hardly surprising, because immigration's job is to inform and decide, it's not to advise. So the websites don't provide that kind of information.
Well, it's quite interesting now to ask you about the facts that you've sort of picked up along the way. So we mentioned, skills, not necessary. Tell me again, what is it?
For employment, the special skills, knowledge and experience are valued to and not readily available in Hong Kong.
Which professions are they gagging for that tend to be given an easy ride? Is there any area where they say, yes, we need you? Or no general ones?
No general ones. I mean, if you've got an obvious sort of rock star applicant from an approvability perspective, it shines out. You know, you just know that they represent human capital that the Immigration Department are going to say yes
to. So it's all about dough.
No, it's about human capital. It's about how accomplished you are and the contribution that you can make. And I know I'm sort of talking in very general terms, but
That's
there's
right.
such a huge array of sort of, individual activity that people do engage in.
Mm-hmm.
But no, people who are genuinely talented get visas in this town. That's the reality.
So they're pretty fair.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
Okay, well, we've just got a couple of minutes left here. If you are one of these people that's been messed around, because it does happen, and Steve maybe can shed some light on it for you, maybe,
yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Morningbrew@rthk.hk. So what's hot on your website at the moment?
Tonight's talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about business investment visas. It's a talk that I give quite frequently, actually. It's in Centre O in 8 Ennissy Road. It's on our website on the homepage. You can check that out.
Is it one of these gigs where people tend to walk out going, oh yeah, now I get it?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because I've got one gentleman flying in from Indonesia to attend this presentation tonight.
Oh, yeah.
He
emailed
and said he really wants to come. Yeah, which is, I'm not suggesting that what I have to say is so important that you should jump on aeroplanes to come and listen to me.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Do you happen to know if there's something on his mind?
No, I don't really know. I mean, I have an idea of what his situation is, because he asked me if it was worth his while attending, and I told him, yeah, it was, because of what's going on. But yeah, I think he'll get real value out of it. Most people do.
Well, good on you, Steve. No actual email questions today, because everybody's busy. But go to his website, hongkongvisageeza.com. Pleasure to talk to you, Steve, and come back in a month or two when you're free.